You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. It's almost time for the game to launch, so you've still got time to pre-order your copy and get a bunch of bonus content, bonus packs, and whatever it might be. Hit the link in our description. It's myself, Momentsy, with the dynamic duo, Mr. Scott Perry and Mr. BJ Armstrong. My brothers, it's been a while. How you doing?
Hey, I'm making it this morning. I had a rough round of golf this morning, man. Ooh. So, you know, it just had a rough nine holes. So,
oh, man.
Just recovering from that.
Man.
Other than
man.
That, I'm doing great.
You better get the game polished up for when me and BJ come to town. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. No,
BJ, how about you? Man. How you living?
You know, Mo, you're going to feel my frequency today on this podcast.
Okay.
You're going to feel my frequency.
Okay.
So let's get right into it.
Okay. Yeah. I need something to take my mind off it. You guys, I forgot that we were going to do the podcast at this time. I'm watching the Premier League started this weekend. I'm watching my team lose within the first 20 minutes. They're 1-0 down. So it's not an ideal start to my weekend. So we're going to talk about basketball as we usually do. And a lot of this summer, we've spent talking about the USA men's Olympic basketball team. But that wasn't the only basketball competition going on, because 3x3 basketball is now part of the Olympics. And the USA went crashing out in the group stages, and the Netherlands won the 3x3 basketball tournament. Now, the USA team is headlined by Jimmer Fredette, who you guys might remember is a college superstar, had a, shall we say, a brief NBA career. It also features Kenyon Barry, who I believe is he the son or the grandson of Rick Barry? Kareem Maddox and Dylan Travis. I got no idea who those two guys are. But that's the team that the USA sent to compete in the 3x3 at the Olympics. So my challenge for you both today is we're going to do a draft of who you would send. And this is just hypothetical, because the FIBA qualification and the rules make it impossible for NBA guys to actually play in this. But let's say we were doing this. Which USA basketball players would you send that weren't on the Olympic roster? So you can't pick KD and LeBron and Steph and Tatum. All the other guys from America. We're going to do a draft. Scott, you get a first pick, then BJ, then me, and we'll go around. You get 3 starters and 1 bench player. Are you ready?
Mo, talking about throwing a curveball.
Yeah, so obviously
I didn't even watch the 3-on-3. I didn't know it was a competition. I didn't know it was an Olympic competition until
now you do.
So I didn't watch any of it. What do they even go to? What's the point?
Is it 21?
Is it 21? And do what? Do 3-point shot count as 2s and inside of 3 count as 1s? Is that how they do it? Was it two and three?
I think it's 2 and 3. I might be mistaken. I didn't watch a lot of it either. Uh-huh. You get a 12-second shot clock in this game. Oh, no, it's 2s and 1s. It is 2s and 1s.
It's 2s and 1s.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's 2s and 1s. Mm-hmm. You get free throws.
And what's the shot clock?
12 seconds.
12 seconds?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a fast-paced game. As soon as the other team score, you take it out and you start again. You don't have to check up. It's fast-paced.
Oh, so it's alternate possessions then, right? No,
yep.
Make it, take it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's no make it, take it. So then stand on one side of the floor too, right?
Yeah. Half court. 3-on-3.
Okay.
You ready? Go ahead with the number 1 overall pick, Mr. Scott Perry.
Give me De'Aaron Fox.
De'Aaron Fox.
I need a point guard who can.
Okay.
It's hard to. He can shoot it from 3. He can get inside the lane. He can draw fouls. And he's
okay.
Clutch.
BJ.
Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown, the obvious omission from Team USA. Mm-hmm. I think for my first pick, I'm going to go with another point guard to match up with you, Scott. And, you know, we're talking about 3-on-3 is like half court in the playground. I got to take Kyrie Irving. You be Kyrie.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Go on, Scott, your second pick.
My second pick, I'm taking my man, who's going to bull his way to the basket. Hard to guard. You know where I'm going. I'm going Julius Randle.
I already wrote it down that you're going to pick him. What about you,
second
BJ?
Pick, Evan Mobley.
Mobley.
Evan Mobley.
Okay. Okay. Well, Scott, you got Randle, big body. BJ, you went with Evan Mobley, big body. I'm going to go with Zion Williamson. And by the way, have you seen a picture of Zion Williamson recently? Have you seen the picture?
Slimmed down a little bit. Slimmed down a little bit.
Has he slimmed down?
He's putting me to shame. I need to get a meal plan. He's lost a lot of body fat. I don't know if the strength will still be there, but it will definitely be quicker. Go on then, your third pick, Scott.
My third pick. I need to get a big. Well, not necessarily a big.
You got Randle.
I've got Randle, who could be my big, and I've got De'Aaron Fox. Bam is gone. Let me go.
Who you go
with...
Mo? Who'd you go with? Kyrie and who?
Zion.
Oh, you're right, Zion. That's right. Okay, go ahead. I'm listening, Scott.
You listening?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, Mo threw a curve with this one because I'm drawing a blank on some of the guys. Let me take Paolo Banchero.
Okay, you stole my pick. Okay, okay, that's a good one.
I'm going Scotty Barnes.
Scotty Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see where you guys are going with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the player I want to pick who kind of fits into that category, but there's someone who you guys have forgotten about here. I'm going with Mr. Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
I'm going with Mr. Jimmy Butler. Okay. And you get 3x3, you have four players on the roster, so you get one more pick.
I'm going to take an old head who could really shoot, could play off of those guys.
No, J.J. Redick's a coach now. You can't pick him.
I'm not picking them. I'm going to take Klay Thompson.
Klay. Yep. Yep.
Well, I know who I want to take as a talent for this. I'm taking Paul George. I'm taking PG. I'm taking PG as a talent.
Okay, so with the final pick, there's loads of guys that I could have picked. No one's picked Donovan Mitchell. No one's picked Tyrese Maxey. I was considering picking Cooper Flagg on raw talent alone. I considered Karl-Anthony Towns because he's a big and he can shoot it. No one picked Trae Young. No one picked James Harden. No one picked Chet Holmgren. There's a whole bunch of people you could pick. I was thinking of maybe picking a Herb Jones in case one of your players starts cooking, he can come in and put the clamps on it. But then I thought, I'm going to pick Aaron Gordon because he gives me the defense and he gives me the vertical threat. It's a 12-second shot clock. If you score, we take the ball out. We can throw up a lob straight away to him and there's nothing you can do about him. AG and Zion flying at the bucket, unstoppable.
Maybe on Scott's team because he got De'Aaron Fox in him.
Yep,
but he ain't doing that against Evan Mobley.
BJ, I ain't got to worry about your team. I ain't got to worry about your team because this game's to 21, and when you get to about 19, and Paul George has the ball, I'm not going to be scared. So you'll be great up until you get to 19.
Paul George is. Worry about Paul George. I got Evan Mobley. I got Jaylen Brown, and I got Scottie Barnes. I can defend. Whoever you want to put, I can defend, and I got Paul George. I Luke Guard, we go. Scott know what I would do to Fox. I'm taking him right to the Fox. He's too little.
Fox has got strong. I ain't worried about that.
We play zone defense. I ain't worried about Scott. Scott can't shoot the three ball, so I ain't worried about Scott.
I got Clay as my sub.
But Clay's gonna play defense when he comes in.
And I'm gonna bully you.
Yeah,
I got thick bodies. You got lean bodies. I got thick bodies.
Yep.
Yeah. We're gonna be checking body parts. Julius Randle and Paolo Banchero. You go, like when I had Ray Lewis come speak to our team in New York, he told the theme he said, you got to make people feel you. And that group is going to make you feel them.
I agree with that. You got 12 seconds. I ain't worried about that.
I know people like contact, huh?
And Motive is too little. Motive playing the 6'5" and under league.
Two of my players play bigger than their heights that I listed.
Okay.
And you think you're gonna have anything at a hoop and Zion ain't gonna be there contesting it? You think Aaron Gordon don't guard bigs in the league?
Well, see, we got bodies to match up with Zion. They may not jump, yes. You know, Zion. And they can back off him and then absorb the hit that he's gonna bring, because we definitely gonna let him shoot. Now Paolo and Julius are streaky from three.
Yeah.
And but see, when they start filling in bodies, their threes, I think they shoot the three better as they start grinding the way at you. And Fox ain't worried about, because Fox gonna show up in the clutch.
Yeah. Fox gonna show up in the
clutch. You gonna get to the clutch though first.
Huh?
Fox gonna show up in the clutch.
Exactly.
But hey, Maxi was a very good name, you know, for guards. And what was the other name you mentioned that we
should get? Should I go through the full list? I wrote down a list of players before that might be picked, right? Here's
sprung this on us.
And here's one that I expected you to take first was Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Maxey, Cooper.
But see, Donovan Mitchell is the one for 3-on-3.
Donovan Mitchell, more so
than Jalen, because Jalen is just not quite athletic enough. I love him in that 3-on-3 and be good, you know, but I don't know if he's athletic enough.
Dame Lillard didn't get picked. Karl-Anthony Towns, Trae Young, James Harden, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren. No one picked Ja Morant.
Thought about Ja, but he's...
You worried about the
De'Aaron right now is a little strong. Arena. I think De'Aaron's a little stronger than he is right now. I love Ja Morant.
DeMar DeRozan, DeJounte Murray, Mikal Bridges, Brooke Lopez, and Caruso.
You know, DeRozan would be a good one.
Yeah, but 12 seconds shot clock. He takes a minute to get to the spot.
DeMar DeRozan on his team, see, then I would be nervous. See, then I know he's physical. See, but I ain't worried about Fox and Clay being physical. See, I ain't worried about that. But if you'd have taken DeMar DeRozan,
do you know who I was thinking of picking?
But see, I picked Clay as my fourth guy because I did need a guy who could just really shoot it. Because you're gonna have to help on them other three I got.
You know,
two of those three in there, and I put Clay in there with any of the combination of those other three guys, you gotta pick your poison. Cause Julius is checking your body part going to that basket. And so is Paolo Banchero.
We could just play sync defense on his team.
That's all right. That's all right.
Do you know who I was considering picking at that last spot? I was thinking about Naz Reid. I think he'd be real good in a 3-on-3.
Big Jelly.
Well, I can tell you one thing this exercise has done. Any of the three teams that any of us just picked would have fared much better than the one they showed up with in the United States in the Olympics this year. Now, I can tell you that much.
I hear it, Scott.
Any of those three teams.
But we were away for a little while. We had a few days off last week. So I thought we'll revisit some questions that the fans sent in. Mm-hmm. And in the spirit of ridiculous hypotheticals, we have one from AG. And he says, who wins, 5 Steph Currys or 5 Rudy Goberts? So a team full of Steph Currys or a team full of Rudy Goberts? Offense versus defense, who would win that game? Full court, 5-on-5 NBA.
I don't even think that's an easy question. I don't even think this is a question.
I think
a team full of Steph Currys would win that quite easily. What is one underrated experience you've had as an agent, BJ, and as a GM, Scott?
What is one underrated experience?
Yeah, like obviously, the obvious answer is like winning a title or something huge like that. So what's an under the radar moment that you've had that really stands out from your careers?
Oh, that stands out.
Yeah.
What is one underrated moment? Well, I tell you the thing that is amazing to me that what you talk about is how important the families are to the kids. It's making sure that they have a good support system. You think of these players, myself included, you know, you come into this league and you're kind of conditioned to overcome whatever obstacles in your way, right? You know, you have an injury, you play through it. You have a bad game, you figure out how to play through it. You lose, you figure it out. But it's one thing that is probably very underrated is how important to have that family structure, a support staff, I should say, with the family. And when you build that family structure and that support, it's easier for people, not players, for people to overcome whatever obstacle comes their way, because there's going to be some obstacles. So one of the things that I was fortunate to have, I had a good support staff. You know, Scott has known me practically my entire life. And you got to have that support to lift you up when you have those moments. And the reason I say that is because it's one thing that I haven't found yet how to overcome. Once you lose your confidence, you never get that back. Excuse me. So having that family, knowing that no matter whatever the outcome is, they're going to be there for you, is very reassuring as you go through this thing called professional sports. So that's probably the one thing that I didn't underestimate it. I just kind of took it for granted with my family and my situation. But you see how important it is for every successful athlete that I've been able to work with. And you could see it from afar as well. When they have a good family structure, it gives you an opportunity to succeed in whatever you decide to do in life.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Scott, as a GM? What's an underrated moment you've had in your career?
Well, I'm just going to call it underrated moments. I won't single out one particular one, but they're all similar in a sense. The day after you have drafted someone and they come to your city and you're introducing them to the draft, and to BJ's point, they come with their families and you are part of a life-changing opportunity for these young people. And that's very underrated because I like to see people do well and succeed and you know, achieve a goal. So that along with, or when you sign a guy to, whether it's your own guy or a free agent, to a big contract, and you bring his family in for the press conference, and you get a chance to, you know, again, just see the joy and energy in that moment from not only that player, but those people who are close to them. Those are moments that I always cherish and remember and will be. Again, they're not talked about. You know, we don't talk about them during the press conference. We don't talk about them in print. But for me personally, just to be a part of that in some capacity, it's a special time, a big time thing, and something that I'll always remember having been able to play a role in when those things happen.
We have a question from Mo Banks, number 10. He says, can you please compare/contrast your perception, this is for BJ, your perception of the five-out offensive schemes versus the offensive schemes you played in as an NCAA and NBA basketball player? Because our listeners hear you talk about everything being five-out now.
Can you give a little insight?
Because a lot of these guys didn't watch the NBA back then. So
okay, yeah.
Well, and Scott, feel free to chime in.
Yeah, very, very simple. The five-out offense now is predicated on the following. You're going to spread the floor with the idea of dribble, drive, dribble, penetration. And then you do one of three things. Either you drive and you get a layup, mm-hmm. You can get to that basket, you get fouled, get to the free throw line, or you shoot the three. That's just as simple as that. It is predicated on the three-point line, which is outside, and then you figure out how to get penetration to the basket. In the previous era, you always wanted to have an offense that was predicated on penetration, either with the pass, you pass it to the post, you drive to the post, or you shoot the ball and you get an offensive rebound. What people underestimate about the game is a shot, a good shot, is actually a form of penetration because it allows you, in theory, if you're running an offense, your offensive rebounder should be in position to offensive rebound. Unlike today's game, where you're just standing on the perimeter. You got five guys outside of the three-point line. Okay, but in today's, when you go to these coaching clinics, the coaches today, they stress long shots, long rebounds. So you'll see everybody running to the free throw line extended to try to get a long rebound because no one's playing in the interior anymore. So the difference is today's game is outside in and the other game is inside out. But the emphasis was always on having a balance in the previous generation, whereas to now, yeah, you know, you'll shoot 60, 70% of your shots is at the three-point line. That's what it is.
Yes.
So that's the difference in today's game. The interesting thing is the best players in the game today, they're the only ones that are allowed to play at the mid-range. Okay. You could make a mid-range shot and the coaches be like, that's not a good shot by today's standards. Where in the previous era, you just tried to get the ball to the open place. Well, you wanted to shoot as many uncontested shots as you possibly could, which is the mentality of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So that is the difference between today's game and the previous generation. However, it's always funny in the playoffs, it always reverts back to the same game, which makes it interesting. That's why you hear shows like our show and others, you know, we all know the playoffs is a different game than the regular season. Well, that's why, because if you want to win, that's the only way you can play. That's the funny thing about five-out offense is you have to have a balance in the way you play if you're going to play, because the defenses of the opposing teams as you advance get better.
So let me expand on that and ask you this, Scott. When it comes to these decisions that you see across the league, right? So we've seen the rise of the three-point shooting. Steph Curry, obviously a huge part of that. And then Daryl Morey made that Rockets team to try and compete with the Warriors and try and outscore them, so on and so forth. But across every different team that you've worked on throughout your career, when you start to see these kind of shifts in trends, who's the driving force behind that? Is it coming from the coaching staff? Is it coming from the front office? Is it coming from ownership? That, because the players you sign is dictated by the style of play you want to run, right? So these shifts in trends, who's the driving force behind them?
Well, you know, it can depend from organization to organization. But I think right now, the overwhelming part is, I mean, it seems like the coaches are giving the front offices and fans what they think they want. And that's what the kind of game BJ talked about, this outside in game. Everything is is based on numerical value of shots now. That's, you know, okay, the three, you know, the layup is the highest valued shot, then the 3-point shot and the free throw. And those are the only areas that people are really concerned about. And so that, you know, came about when teams became, you know, much more analytical in their approach to evaluating and studying the game. And so now you have, it's reflected in terms of a lot of the different coaches that are hired, especially the newer generation coaches that play to that consistently. Now, some of your old school coaches or coaches who've been around who are going to coach the game based on fundamentals and skill may attack it from a, you know, a different, you know, approach, more like when BJ played. See, See, to me, when I study, you know, the game now versus, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you know, one thing that I always you wanted to do is when you attack a defense is break it down. Dribble penetration is the number one thing that can break a defense down. That we know, you know, but again, years ago, that dribble penetration was breaking the defense down so you could get interior or mid-range, or, you know, shots at the rim or in shots within close mid-range area, because those were very makeable shots. Guys trained to make those shots. Now we're trying to get into the interior so we can shoot three-point shots to kick out for the three-point area. And one thing that has become lost, in my opinion, in today's game versus years ago, is we don't play to the second side. That's the other thing that's going to hurt a defense. See, an average defensive team can guard you if they're not made to rotate, if they don't have to have any kind of defensive rotational. How do we get a defense to rotate? Well, you get the ball moving, you know, inside, you know, if it's a post-touch, kick out, reverse to the second side. Now players are going to have to scramble and close out. And when that starts happening, now that opens up easier scoring opportunities. You can attack closeouts on drives. You know, now everyone is, you know, when you get people in a scramble situation, now most coaches are teaching them, just run them off the three-point line. They don't care about what happens really after that. Just don't let them shoot the three. But when it's time to win, like, you know, we saw in the finals and we saw, you know, in a number of the series leading up to the finals, players are going to revert back to what they're most comfortable doing. Yeah, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they were anomalies, guys that could really depend on a three-point shot in the most clutch of situations. But the majority of your great players now, they're going to feel if they got to win the game, they're going to try to win that game 15 feet and in.
Mm-hmm.
You know? See, so, the thing is more about this league, talking about the NBA. Scott's going to chuckle when I say this. This is a copycat league.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There are guiding principles to this game that whatever game you're watching, whatever style you're watching, it must provide a form of penetration because you have to play against a defense. And as you advance, the defenses get better. So your offensive structure has to get better. There are only three ways to do it. You got to do it with the dribble, which now seems to be the emphasis in today's game. Yeah. More so than yesterday's game. Mm-hmm. You do it with the pass. Our generation did it more with the pass, more so than the dribble. And you have to do it with the shot because offensive rebounding is a key component of the game. You have to get extra possessions. That's why blocking shots, steals, and offensive rebounds are key categories that you want to look at the stat sheet to figure out how your team is playing. Okay. No matter what we do and what we say, every offensive team, every offensive coach has to provide the same thing. I have to get the ball to my best player where they operate. Scott used the word, which was perfect, anomaly. There are anomalies that come in this game.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the fact that Steph Curry was shooting the three. He was shooting it at a percentage we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's, you may never difference. See again.
Right. Yes, exactly. The difference. So we can imitate getting up a lot of threes. The difference between Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, as we figured out, just like when I met Scott Perry as a young kid, I thought Scott Perry was hot the first 10 times I saw him playing. And I finally figured out that's just his shot.
Exactly.
Steph Curry just mm-hmm. shoots that shot at a 42, 43% clip on a bad mm-hmm. day. Where exactly. The rest of us, that's a hot day.
Exactly.
That's the difference. So why we're imitating Steph Curry, I understand why Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are shooting a mm-hmm. high volume of shots. What I don't understand is why is the rest of the league shooting, because they're not shooting at the same clip.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Now, every team is going to get the ball to their best player. You saw it just here in the Olympics. Early in the process in Team USA, at the end of the game, they got the ball to KD. The last two games, here's the offense. Get the ball to my best player, and we play from it in his operating area. Here's the thing about Steph Curry that all of us have watched this young man play since Davidson. He's been doing the same thing, Scott.
No question. No question.
Since we've watched him play for the last 15 years. Now,
no question.
You might have thought he was hot in Team USA. You go, that was unbelievable. Scott and I have been watching this young man do the same exact thing since, I don't know, what is this, year 13, 14 for him? Yeah. I don't know what year it is.
That's what got him drafted at number 7.
Exactly. Because we finally came to the realization, that's just what he do. Like, it's not, he's not hot. We've been watching him make these shots for so long now. No one who is scouting him thinks this is anything other than this is what he does night after night after night. And that's what makes him a unique player, because he is an anomaly within the system. He's an anomaly. Like, yes, I wish I could tell you.
And the other thing is that people often forget in these conversations about Stephen Curry is Draymond Green himself is an anomaly, because first of all, no one wanted to pick him in the first round. They thought he was too slow to play the three, too small to play the four, and players that can orchestrate a defense in the way that he can, and then run an offense like he can. So he allows Steph Curry to not need to be the point guard for the Warriors when he plays. And a lot of Steph Curry shots come off those insane NFL illegal picks that Draymond Green sets. So Steph Curry is not only an anomaly in what he does, but he was in the perfect situation for him. And the perfect storm created what it created.
No, one thing I wanted to bring up, I was listening to BJ, you know, when you're talking about winning basketball. Let's just go back to this year's finals. And when we're talking about the difference in that series was Boston's ability to attack the paint. And a lot of times it was via the dribble, but they did a good job in attacking the paint and then sharing the basketball and getting Dallas to rotate. Dallas was not good enough defensively to handle that. Once you break a defense down, you get into that lane and you involve a second defender. And then if you're good offensively and kicking the ball out and then willing to continue to move the basketball through via the pass, now you're going to get more quality shots offensively each and every time down. And that's what Boston did better than Dallas throughout the course of the series, with the exception of the one game they lost.
Can you expand when we talk about winning basketball? Everyone talks about, we're talking about it here right now, about offense, how guys spray the court and outside in. The reason the Celtics were the best team in the league this year is because they were the only team, in my opinion, this year that didn't have to double team at any position. Can you talk about the importance of not compromising your defensive principles if you're going to be a championship caliber team? Because, Scott, you said an important word, winning. How are you going to win when you're double teaming and always in rotation? Can you talk about that, Scott?
Oh, no. Look, you know, I'm going to go back to my coaching days and also back to my time, especially in Detroit. And what I would see on the board, and I'm going to use Larry Brown as an example, but I put the same thing on my board as a collegiate coach and coaches I work with. You talking about winning and being a championship team. Three areas I always put on the board. Defend, rebound. And those are the two areas that BJ talked about. Those are one and two. And then sharing the basketball. So no matter what offense we run, we got to share the basketball. But let's dig into the first, defend and rebound. That goes to the beginning of training camp when you're trying to install your culture, your pride, and how we're going to play. And what I say to BJ Armstrong first day of camp, and I put him in the drill with the point guards. Okay, match up. Keep your guy at the lane. Now, obviously, you know, you got some great guys who can handle the basketball. So BJ, I'm saying to BJ, when I tell him to guard his man one-on-one, BJ's got to be able to take away his first move for sure. Force him into a counter move and a contest. So if a guy can beat you after on his second or third move and it's contested, okay, so if he can do that for 48 minutes, then okay, we'll shake his hand at the end and say, job well done. But as BJ knows, for the most part, that is difficult to do. So first you got to, everybody, that's all five guys have to have pride. That I'm going to match up with my man one-on-one and I'm not relying on any help. The help is there for the great offensive player who happens to beat us. And then I got to be able to trust that I can get the help and then we can rotate. But it starts with that individual pride of guarding my man.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with that. And then mm-hmm. when the shot goes up, and this, I don't see this being taught much, very much more, NBA or college. Everybody just yells it out. Block out. Well, what does that mean? Block out. There's technique to blocking. BJ will tell you, when we're coming up as kids, going to camp and through high school practices and college practices, and even when BJ was in the pros, they worked on it. Shot goes up. There was a way you were taught to be able to block your man out because
yep, find your man.
My man is not going to get this rebound.
But what's funny is in the NBA Finals, the Celtics generated so many offensive rebounds from mm-hmm. players crashing from the wings or the corners straight to the hoop mm-hmm. to get the offensive rebound and score an easy two. Because the Dallas players, once the shot goes up, if the rebound isn't coming towards them, they would just stand there kind of waiting for it and then go out and transition.
Yeah, you got to be able to, you know, and look, the great rebounders, again, they check and go. They go pursue the ball. The great defensive rebounders and offensive rebounders. There is a willingness and a pride that I want that ball more than the guy mm-hmm. who I'm matched up with. And can you do it over and over again? You know, I worked around one of the best in the league to do it, and that was Ben Wallace. His determination, the way he could track a ball, you know, his offensive rebounding prowess, you know, there were teams that would not necessarily want to guard him early on offensively, say, oh, we don't have to worry about being offensively. But that was a mistake because he was a good fifth offensive player in that way because he was getting us six or seven extra possessions a game easily. Mm-hmm. Whether he got the ball himself or he batted it out to a teammate. Just getting those exit, those are demoralizing for a defense. But I
it's tough to play defense for 24 seconds, play good defense 24 seconds, and then have to keep going.
I just would, you know, again, Boston was good because obviously each guy, you know, look, it's when they went and got Drew Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum has really grown in this area during his career. Those four right there, let's start with them. And then, you know, Al Horford was starting like, they all understood, I got God, my man. I'm taking this matchup personal. You know, and that is huge. And then, you know, Porzingis had to buy in. He provided some rim protection there. But without that, you're not going to win a title unless every player on that roster. I mean, even we saw Sam Hauser,
Peyton Pritchard, showing up defending. Everyone in the team.
Yeah, those matchups are personal. We got a guy on this podcast who won three titles. He understood. That's how he got on the floor in the NBA. As well as much as good an offensive player as he was. And that's what he loved to do. See, I know all the old secrets about it. I know what's really in his heart, what he really wants to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you know how he got on the floor to help them win? Oh, he had to match up with Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He had to match up with John Stockton. Mm-hmm. He had to match up with what's the mayor out of Sacramento, Kevin Johnson. He had to match up with Mark Price.
Tim Hardaway.
So, okay. And they weren't saying, well, yeah, BJ, we're going to match him up, but you got all this kind of help.
No.
Keep him out the lane. Oh, BJ, you can't keep him out the lane? Okay, we'll get somebody else. So BJ had to say, well, shit, if I'm going to make it, if I'm going to stick in this league and fulfill my dream, guess what? I'm going to figure out how to keep him in front. And if the guy scores on me, he's made a hell of a move and I've contested it. Okay, then, you know, that's basketball. We live with that.
Yep.
So.
Thanks for that quote. Who sent that question?
Which question? The difference in the offenses. Yeah. Mo Banks, 10.
Yeah.
He also sent in a message saying, well, this was from August the 3rd. He said, today's episode was great. Hoop Genius might be the best NBA podcast for covering the economics of the NBA. Love the conversation between Bijan and Scott discussing the criteria for what justifies an NBA max contract player. Shout out to Mo Banks.
I love it.
Shout out.
That's all love. So we will be back tomorrow with another episode. We've got 3 episodes this week. And then I'm away on a work trip, not a holiday. I wish it was.
hey, Mo, I think on one of your trips, we need, you know, like they used to, they have these shows where they up and close, you know, where they follow.
Oh, like a documentary.
Rookies, kinda. a documentary, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I think you need to do a behind the scenes travel with Mo Muncy.
As long as we stop filming. Really,
Mo, no. And I'm asking, it's 24/7.
Unsensitive. Good luck finding a network to put that
on. Hey, Mo, no, we can't cut it off after the 12 hours or 15 hours.
There ain't no cameraman out there who can match my sleep schedule. 24 hours. Good luck. But I'm going to be doing some cool stuff with NBA 2K, so stay tuned on my social medias for all of that content that will be coming through, and then we'll be back next week. But we still got 2 more episodes to come before then, so make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and you never know, Scott, I might just document it for you. You never know. But appreciate you both. Until tomorrow, get buckets.